Welcome to the Content and Media Matters podcast, a series of interviews with key leaders throughout the industry, all brought to you by the Content and Media team at Newco, a specialist global recruitment and executive search firm.
Welcome to the Content and Media Matters podcast. Your hosts today are me, Tim Meredith, business manager, and Henry Johnson, consultant here at Newco. And we are delighted to joined today by Geronimo Menacas-Candlejo, the CEO, CPO, and co-founder of Jump Data Driven Video. Jera has had an impressive 20 years, over 20 years of experience in the industry, having worked all the way up from project engineer to CEO. Geronimo is a hands-on startup leader who once called Silicon Valley home, now residing in Madrid. And Jero leads Jump, helping businesses in the media and entertainment space utilize big data and artificial intelligence technologies. Welcome to the show, Jero.
Thank you very much. Thanks for inviting me. Really exciting about the conversation today.
Absolute pleasure. So to get started, we always like to ask people the same thing. And that's, how did you first get into the content and media industry?
That's a good question. Actually, it was a very natural process. When I was younger and still living with my parents, actually, my father ran a video clubs chain in Spain, right? So I get contact very early when I was a kid with movies, with everything about video distribution, the physical world. And at the same time, I was passionate about culture and technology. So when I finished my engineering degree, I had a very clear idea that I wanted to be in the disruption of how people really entertain themselves. At that time, I didn't know if it was about music or video. Actually, I'm a music lover. But I had very clear idea that this is the space that I wanted to start, and more than 20 years later, I'm still here. That is not bad.
So you had a goal from very early on. You've pretty much got there. And what was your sort of first role properly in the media and entertainment space? What was your kind of entry point?
The entry point, it was all about project management. I was probably making a lot of coding when I was a kid. So I started coding at 9 years old.
Really?
So I was really a very, very small developer and during my whole career. But the reality is that when I started my professional career, I was more interested in how to really grow initiatives, manage projects, and of course the entrepreneurial spirit that it was with me since I was born. And so that's why I decided that instead of coding and making a code, that is something that I was doing for a long time ago since I was a kid, I was more interested in how to build things and scale things and makes people happy.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, as we're talking about the past already, that does bring us sort of nicely onto a little bit of an exploration of that. I know ahead of the show, we sent you sort of a little questionnaire to give us some inspiration for the conversation. And you mentioned there that growing up, you really also wanted to be specifically in music, try and be a rock star as well. And that Bono was somebody that in that kind of space really, inspired you and somebody that you sort of loved and followed. I'd also be keen to understand sort of what or who has been the biggest influence on your professional career. You know, is it, you know, because you're in the media entertainment space, it's the same people professionally and personally, or is there someone else for your kind of more professional career?
No, professionally speaking, I was really a Steve Jobs fan. Mm-hmm. So I followed his entire career and I really was following every single step that he did as a genius and how this guy really disrupt several industries and actually changed the world as we know it and had an impact in the humanity, right? So I was very interested in this guy. And yes, professionally speaking, it was one of my references when I decided that instead of going after the rock star dream, that it's actually something that I fail. Probably if I would succeed, I will not follow in the technology path. But actually, I really love both at the same level. So I really love music. And at that time, it was crazy about becoming a professional musician with my band, but the same level of enthusiasm and really motivation really was there for technology. So yeah. So the references in the case of technology at that time for me was Steve Jobs. Yes.
Yeah, and mentioning you were in a band yourself. What did you play, or were you singing?
I would define as composer. But I like to say that I play all instruments and none of them are at the same time. So I use I play a lot of instruments with the ultimate goal to create songs and melodies and all of that.
And do you still do that in your spare time?
Well, I have very limited time because now I have four kids. So actually,
that does somewhat limit the music. Yeah, the music.
Exactly. So you need to make priorities, and now it's kind of a very, very light hobby, I would say.
Fair enough. And what achievements, either in your personal or professional career, would you say you're most proud of?
Well, professionally speaking, definitely it's creating companies. This is the second company that I built, and the most proud company I'm really enjoying and really making things grow, and also expecting to help a lot of companies to transform video experiences into data-driven and video services. So this is probably my most exciting achievement, and also a very nice moment I live in my present. And of course, personally speaking, is my family. My family is all for me, and this is really the pillar that really sustain the rest of the things I do in life.
Wonderful. Lovely, wonderful. And well, that's what nicely brings us to our next section. So you've given us sort of a good insight into your past and kind of how that shaped how you are today. So let's move on from the past and discuss the present and the future. Henry?
So we never like to predict the future, but we certainly always like to ask. And before we jump to that, I'd be keen to know your thoughts on the present state of the injuries, Jero. Specifically, what do you think is the most exciting thing happening at the moment within the broadcast media industry?
Well, I would say that the most exciting thing is how in our video entertainment industry, especially OTT and pay TV, is that the disruptors are being disrupted, right? So yeah. all these guys, Netflix and all these guys, Amazon, all these people that really push hard in change things and for the better, right? In terms of initial experience and how people wanted to be entertained, not very challenged, are being challenged by the old incumbents, right? So all these studios and the HBOs, Disney's of the world now are really pushing hard and making things very competitive. So the disruptors now need to defend against that, right? So yeah. I think that's the most interesting things that are happening now. And there is a second factor, I think, that in the market would need to be considered, that everybody is talking about that the growth is slowing down, but there is some fear about the new model maybe is not working as expected. And I have a very personal opinion about that, is that what happens is that I think both COVID pandemic plus this new trends that we are living in a socio-political, geopolitical space with war and all of that has been pushing and accelerating a lot consumption and ways of entertainment at a level that probably was something that it should happen 5 years from now or 3 to 5 years from now.
Yeah.
So now, the market is like auto-regulated, trying to balance again at the levels that probably are the right ones. So I'm a believer that the industry is very healthy. What probably was not healthy was the expectations that these companies had when they saw pandemic and they thought, well, wow, this is the golden grail, right? So we are gonna get a lot of revenues, money, growth, everything very fast. Changing people's habits takes time, and when you try to force it, it tends to be auto-regulated because people need time to really assimilate technology, new habits, and all of that. So I think these two aspects of what is happening right now are the ones that I'm following more intense, because I think are really exciting. These two things that I mentioned.
Certainly. And I mean, it goes back to the saying of content is king. And I think the pandemic, like you mentioned, consumption just was on the rise following that. And I mean, thinking forwards to the future, what would you say you're most excited to see happen in the industry in the coming 5 to 10 years?
Well, 5 to 10 years is a lot of time. But trying to make a long-term exercise, I think what I'm most excited about is about the convergence of different ways of entertainment into the new platforms that probably will be at a scale and massive by that time. You can call it metaverse, you can call it multi-entertainment platforms, you can call it whatever it will be called. That probably the name, it will be very different in 5-10 years from now. So, but what I really think is that it's going to be a convergence in ways for people to entertain. So everything about video, gaming, social media, it's going to be a gray area where all these disciplines probably will be mixed up. So I think these vertical industries that now works very separately one from the others, my take is that probably will become more multidisciplinary entertainment companies that needs to mix different elements to create entertainment experience. My kids, that they are 3 years old, they don't understand linear, but even more than that, they don't understand SVOD, right? So it's kind of crazy because all these models that we tend to be today, that you subscribe to a specific content and it's a vertical approach, niche, you cannot do nothing more than watching something, you cannot interact with your friends, you cannot play a game, you cannot be rewarded for making things. I think it's going to be completely disrupted again in 5 to 10 years. So who knows, but I think that this is probably what I envision now.
No, I think I definitely agree with you there, and I think we could potentially do a separate podcast just on the metaverse. We'll have to schedule that in for the future. And I mean, thank you for digging into what you think the future of the broadcast media industry holds. And now I'm going to hand over to Tim and we can discuss the topic which really matters.
Yes, so we come to the matters within the Content and Media Matters podcast, which in your case is sort of all around your expertise and interest in data and data-driven video. So as the CEO, CPO and co-founder of Jump, you know better than most the importance of big data and artificial intelligence, how it's come to prominence, what it's doing, what it's helping. So in your opinion, what is it that makes data a differentiating factor for successful players in the industry, and how does it kind of, its effective use, how does that set people apart and give them a competitive edge?
Well, I think data, it's been there, I mean, for decades, right? So the data is nothing new for companies and neither in media entertainment. What is new is exactly that now they need to use it as a competitive advantage, right? So in this increasingly competitive environment and when definitely you need to differentiate yourself. It doesn't matter if it's because of content or its experience or verticals or whatever. You need to fully understand your audience, and you can only do that if you use data. And apart from that, you need to make things very, very, very personal to your audience. Otherwise, they feel that they are another one in the basket, and people tend to just go away and find another place where they can be treated more personal, right? So in personalization and really making things work for you, and we all are different and we need to be treated different, and not just in consumption, but also in messaging, also in the channels we've been impacted, and in many different aspects, it's something you can only do with data, right? So I cannot be more sure that data is gonna become more and more a key element in the center of the strategy for media and entertainment. And actually, we are seeing that in the market, that all customers and companies out there are not thinking in data-driven strategies as an optional or later stage activity. It's more and more in the center of what they need to do since day zero, right? So
And I'd be interested to see your thoughts on this, because I obviously spend most of my days talking to people in the media industry, and often quite specifically analytics. And you do get the feeling that over the past few years, the focus has shifted a little bit from, you know, we're trying to attract people, we're trying to understand what they want to kind of get them on the platforms, and more to a thought of, especially as the pandemic's worn on, and, you know, even Netflix is, well, they put out a press release saying they only lost 1 million subscribers rather than 2 million, as if that was great news. So do you feel like the focus has turned from trying to find new people to more, okay, maybe we're hitting the limits of the number of people that are, you know, willing to subscribe at a certain level to get entertainment? And so it's shifted more to, how do we retain who we've already got? How do we more effectively monetize the people that we already have? And do you think that sort of that shift is happening, and does that kind of change what people want out of data analytics, the kind of information they're getting, the kind of services like yours that they're using?
Yeah, definitely. There's two angles on that. First of all, acquisition needs to be linked with retention, right? If you attract the right audience to your service, the people that really is going to have the highest customer lifetime value and tenure in your service, that impacts as well in the retention, right? Because your churn is going to be lower. So retention starts with acquisition. And so everybody have limited budget for acquisition. So you need to use it in the right way. And there is data-driven ways to really focus your budget in the right acquisition channels with the right segmentation, with the right audience. So apart from really optimize the acquisition cost of your acquisition strategies, you make sure that moving forward in the funnel, you will have people less likely to churn and more likely to have a higher customer lifetime value. So these two concepts needs to be linked. This is the first thing. And second, of course, now more and more, it's not just about the first churn, right? Because I think the consumption habits, at least for several years, and in this competitive context, are going to be more about churning, resubscribing. So you need to manage that process as well. It's not just that people churn and you forget about these people. You need to really focus in reacquisition, because you know that more than ever, there is an opportunity for these people to come back to your service.
Yeah.
So you need to manage the right acquisition, you need to manage the reacquisition, and also in the middle is the more traditional retention strategies that it's all about putting in front of the people content they want to watch.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be serious. This is the driver, right? You have the content you want to watch, and it's enough content for you to sustain and maintain month by month my entertainment expectations, then people will keep with you at the right price, of course, and with the minimums of user experience, quality of experience, and all the others things that, of course, is a mandatory thing. Otherwise, you don't need a strategy, a retention strategy. You need to fix that, right?
Yeah.
But if you have all these checks, then it's everything about content. It's how you present and how you really make people feel that there is always something to watch for them. And then it's a data-driven, of course, a strategy. You need to put in front of the people the content they want to watch and not be generalistic about your content offering.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes sense. And it might be slightly tangential topic, but what do you think of players like Netflix sort of going full circle, it feels, and saying, okay, well, you know, there's only so many people that are going to be retained through a subscription model. Yeah, maybe we will start to do more advertising driven content again, because I'm sure there are just the same applications for your technology and other analytical technologies in that. But what do you think of that sort of, you know, going back to where it all started and saying, okay, maybe the subscription model doesn't work for you, we'll do a separate advertising driven service?
Well, I think it's a good movement against everybody saying in the market, but I think this has been in the space for a long time, and there is target audiences for all these different tiers. And also, especially, for example, in APAC, it's been working especially good AVOD models or freemium models as a starting point in this land and expand strategy. And then once people is engaged and they really see the value of your service, then they move to a subscription model, especially the ones that have the pockets for that. Mm. But if they don't have the pockets, at least you can monetize this content and your service with these people that otherwise will never subscribe anyway. There is always, this is a maths game, because at the end, there is always this threshold, because it's going to be a percentage of people that are paying subscriptions now that they will move, and then that downside their packets to the freemium one. So there is always a threshold that it's the difficult part in the designing these strategies that the figures are good, right? So you lose certain people, but at the same time, as you are acquiring a lot of other customers that you can upsell, then you make the game work. So, but I think it's a natural movement. I mean, there is not enough people in the world that can pay probably 4-6 OTT services subscription, right? So I think it's a natural movement that you have all these different tiers, and people will move along them from tiers and also from different services, right? So
yeah, perfect, wonderful. Well, thank you for your insights on all of those areas. Really good to hear your thoughts on those. Which brings us to our next section, which is something we always like to address with everyone that comes on the podcast, and that's the area of diversity. Henry?
Well, I mean, where to begin is such a broad topic, and certainly one which is so important, and I know it's one which everyone in the industry, we're all striving towards improving this, and really like to talk to individuals such as yourself that have come up through the industry and have grown with it, and really to take a look back at the past and across your time, how have you seen diversity change throughout your time in the industry?
It's a good point. Actually, I'm seeing a lot of progress in the last years in our industry as well, but still a lot of work to do, right? So But I mean, starting in the CEOs of the companies, board of directors of the companies, there is a lot of work to be done yet. But I think diversity is a key aspect, and it's proven that when you really care about diversity and you really make efforts for creating a company that is diverse, that really take care of making sure that everybody can be themselves, the outcome is incredible, because you enrich your experience, and you enrich at the end the point of views and the different people that came with different views and angles. So we make everyday efforts in diversity in our company. That's true that sometimes it's not as easy as we would like to, because we have a lot of blockers in the society for really make the process faster than it is today. But it's everyone's responsibilities to really on a daily basis make a small steps that at the end all of them together provoke bigger steps, right? So
definitely, and it's such a grassroots problem as well. And I know there's some brilliant organizations that try and tackle that really with younger children that would be coming up into the industry. And I suppose thinking forward, what more do you think can be done within companies to improve diversity and inclusion?
That's a good question. I don't believe in force laws and all these things. I think the most important, and when the really things happen, is when you start in education, right? So I think we all, especially the ones that are fathers and mothers, needs to educate their kids with these values, and really these people is the people that is going to agree with that DNA, that when they will be in the professional, in our case, in media and entertainment, they will naturally change. You don't need to ask for change, because they will naturally change because they have been educated in that way. So I don't know if it's a bit pessimistic, but I think the real change will become with the generations that has been educated in this way. For people that is not been educated in this way, like we are, we all are, even if we have been educating with nice parents and all of that, but the society have a lot of topics that we couldn't avoid and when we were kids. It's going to be an extra effort, an extra mile, small steps, but the real change will become with the new generations.
No, we completely agree. And we're really glad that you feel as passionate about it as we do. Now we're keen to take a bit of a sidestep and understand a bit more about you. And our listeners are a curious bunch, so I'm sure they'd love to learn a bit more. So what does your perfect weekend look like?
Perfect weekend. Okay. If we consider weekend 2 days, I would say that a perfect weekend, it would be Saturday with my family, going out to the nature and walking and playing and all these things, and maybe next day Sunday attending or going to a concert venue with my closest friends. That would be a perfect weekend.
It sounds like a good one as well, especially when you've got the Spanish sunshine. not dealing with any of the UK weather. And now we're going to go straight into our quick fire round, Tim.
Yes. So we're not going to give you too long to think about these. So we're going to try and get your immediate impressions. So here we go. Netflix or Disney Plus?
Disney versus Disney Plus.
Yeah.
Okay. I need to choose.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
Netflix.
Plane or train?
Train, definitely.
A cold beer or an iced latte?
Nice latte.
What's your go-to karaoke song?
Alive and Kicking, the Simple Minds.
Lovely. Good. I like that one. A late night out or a cozy night in?
Late night house.
If you could live anywhere in the world, where would it be?
Santa Monica in California.
Oh, very nice. Favorite sport?
Tennis.
A morning or an evening person?
Evening.
City life or the countryside?
City life.
City life. Apple or Samsung? Apple or Samsung?
Samsung.
Yes, good. I'm glad to have another Android loyalist on the show. Everyone else in the office is iPhones, and I'm sticking with Android. And if you could only eat one meal for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Pasta.
Perfect. Any particular kind?
Macaroni.
Lovely stuff. Wonderful, wonderful. Well, thank you for indulging us on that. I like to sort of put people on their toes with it. So let's go on to our final question. Henry?
So our guest's final question is always the same. You like to finish with a bang, so to say. So what is one piece of advice you would give to someone entering the industry?
Yes, entering in the industry.
Yep.
Okay. So passion is the first thing that you need to have for whatever you make in life. So if you don't really are passionate about media and entertainment, I think that's the first probably alarm warning for not continuing. So, and then the second one, it would be get out of your comfort zone as soon as you feel that you will feel very quiet, right? So this is an amazing industry with a lot of things you can do. It's been disrupted and still in disruption process for a lot of decades. So you need to feel comfortable as well with changes. This is not an industry for, you know, like, I don't know, whatever company and retail or things that don't change as much often. Here, every single day is happening something. So you need to be prepared for that and feel comfortable and enjoy the change as well, right? So being happy with people changing, companies moving, M&A processes, all these kind of things that if you really are not a changing person, you can be kind of, frustrated or stressed, right? So, but if you embrace that change and if you really enjoy that and you understand that change is something positive, then you can enjoy a lot because it's a very nice and beautiful industry. And at the end, if you acknowledge that all these things that we are doing as an industry are having really a positive impact on people, that it's really feeling things with entertainment, it's a very nice industry to work.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, that brings us to the end of the show. Thank you so much for your time, Yaron, and great to hear all of your thoughts and insights. It's been a pleasure to have you on. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Tim. Thank Harry. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you enjoyed it, please do subscribe and give us a rating. It really helps these stories to be found and enjoyed by more people. For more information about NewCo, we can be found at www.newco-group.com. That's NEUCO-group.com.